My name is Gabriela Chen. I live with my family in Hong Kong, but originally I come from Poland, where I was born and raised. As I grew up, Poland was part of the Soviet bloc, ruled by communist authoritarian regime. Democratic transition and freedom came in 1989, when after years of struggle followed by the round table negotiations, the communist government agreed to hold the first semi-democratic elections since the end of the Second World War. The election was held on June 4, 1989. I remember it very well, as I have volunteered to campaign for the Solidarity candidates in Warsaw. I could not vote myself because I was only 17. But for my parents, it was the first ever elections in which they took part. Up to that moment, boycotting all the democratic elections was the only way they could express their discontent with the government. My parents were not unique in that. For many people, it was the first time ever at the polling station. My role in the campaign was to explain how to cast a valid vote for our candidates. Solidarity movement won a landslide victory on that day, and in the evening, when in a jubilant mood, I returned home to watch news, I expected our elections to make worldwide headlines. Instead, to my great dismay, the news bulletin reported the horrors of the Tiananmen Square massacre in Beijing. Of course, in the day preceding the crackdown, we all cheered for the Chinese students, so it was awful to see them killed and their dreams crushed, while we in Poland were celebrating peaceful democratic transition. Just like the parliamentary elections of June 4, 1989, marked the beginning of the democratic change in Poland, so did the failed purge of August 1991, started the chain of events that eventually led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. On the 15th of August, 1991, together with some friends, I was attending an international religious festival, the World Youth Day, held at the Black Madonna Shrine in Częstochowa. The Polish Pope, now Saint John Paul II, was there with over 1.5 million of young people attending. Polish government opened the borders to allow visa-free access to thousands of young people from the Soviet Union so that they could attend this festival. My friends and I were taking care of a group of young Russians from Moscow. During the festival, we shared a space in our tents, and after returning to Warsaw, we invited them to stay in our apartments so that we could do some sightseeing together. Though till very recently, Poland was part of the Soviet bloc, these were the first Russians I've ever personally met. They were truly happy for us that Poland got its freedom back and said that they could not imagine that the system could change into the Soviet Union. Yet only a few days later, when they were still staying with us, Gorbachev was temporarily ousted in the failed purge on August 19, 1991. Together with these new young Russian friends, we watched on TV events of the coup unfold in front of our eyes. The process of the final disintegration of the Soviet Union has begun. What seemed impossible just a few days before became a reality. We thought it was a miracle. I cherish the memory of that time. The fact that I witnessed these events alongside young Russians was an incredible coincidence, or perhaps fate. Seeing their excitement of the prospect of the Soviet Union and the communist system collapse, perhaps for the first time I saw Russians also as victims of the totalitarian regime rather than the representatives of the oppressors. With the arrival of democracy and market economy, everyday life completely changed. Surely for some people, the change was very hard. Many state-owned enterprises bankrupted, and it took some time before the unemployment figures went down. During the first few years after the change, we experienced hyperinflation and other economic difficulties. But we were free, and unlike before, we could decide what to do with our lives. Foreign capital started flowing in. People's sense of entrepreneurship kicked in, and soon positive results of these changes became apparent. The first thing that struck me was the change of colors on the streets of Warsaw. Advertisements, new decorations on the shop displays, multitude of street hawkers selling colorful t-shirts and newly printed uncensored books took away ever-present grayness that surrounded us before. People started to look more relaxed, less shy of the eye contact, while the stern look on their faces faded. Shop assistants suddenly saw customers as welcome guests, not a nuisance. Officers in the government institutions stopped giving people attitude. It felt like a spring arrived after the terribly long and cold winter. I first became aware that there was something wrong in the country I lived in late 1970s. I had cousins in America, and they usually visited us every 2 years or so, bringing lots of presents with them, pretty and interesting things that we could not buy in Poland. Then the economic crisis hit, and even that limited selection of goods that was previously available in shops was gone. Food and other necessities were rationed. Alcohol and cigarettes were seen as basic items, so my parents, who neither smoke or drank, could swap their quota for sugar and sweets to keep us, their children, happy. I remember one day I ran out of school notebooks. I walked from one stationery shop to another, unable to get hold of any. Finally, on the way back, I met a classmate who shared with me some of hers. People helped each other in those days. It was a real spirit of solidarity. Things started to be dire after the imposition of the martial law in Poland in 1981. Lots of people got arrested for their participation in the resistance movement, including few members of my own family. One of my arrested uncles had four small children at home. The family was flooded with gifts from friends, relatives, and anonymous donors. Meanwhile, the Polish Catholic Church played a very important role in distributing overseas aid to the wider population. I remember when on many occasions I came back from my Sunday school class with a packet of food sent from abroad. These donations made a huge difference. Not only they helped us to survive, but also made us feel that we are not alone in this, that somebody cared. The only way I can now express my gratitude to those anonymous donors who helped us back then is to be generous to migrants, victims of wars and natural disasters so abundant in today's world. I was nearly 10 years old when the martial law was imposed in Poland. Police hour was introduced, television programs were cancelled, telephone lines cut. But despite that, we stayed informed. My parents and I, as I grew up, tuned in on a daily basis to listen to the uncensored news bulletins broadcasted from the West. Radio Free Europe, Voice of America, BBC, although with disturbed signal, kept us up to date. We also had access to multitude of illegal publications, which included current news, uncensored books, and periodicals. How and where they were produced remains mystery for me up to these days. People didn't ask too many questions about it, to avoid betraying any sensitive information in case they were caught by police and interrogated. After reading, the publications were passed on to others, family and friends, and people who could be trusted. I joined the resistance effort when I became a teenager. For a young person like me, it was something exciting to do. Besides distributing illegal publications in my high school, I joined many protests and demonstrations. Some of them were organized under the umbrella of the Catholic Church. I belonged to an independent scouting movement run by Catholic Intellectuals Club. Besides regular camping and adventure trips that scouts usually do, we went to holy masses and pilgrimages to holy sites, holding solidarity flags and pro-democracy banners. It was rather safe because, unlike during the strikes and street demonstrations, police rarely used tear gas and armed vehicles to disperse crowds during church events. Each time our beloved Pope, St. John Paul II, visited, he gathered millions of people around him. Police were so outnumbered. Seeing it, we grew stronger and less fearful. In response to this religious fervor, the regime, in its cowardly manner, would rather persecute individual priests who had particularly large following. Perhaps the most famous was now blessed Father Jerzy Popiełuszko, who was kidnapped and murdered by police in 1984. I attended his funeral alongside nearly a million people who defied government warnings and came to pay their last respects. Finally, I want to mention the role of culture and the sense of humor that kept our spirits up throughout all these years. My parents, especially my mother, who is an artist, were always very culture savvy. They took me to many underground exhibitions, theater performances, and music concerts. Each time we got hold of illegal sound recordings, in no time we knew them by heart. We also loved to laugh. Laughing at our own peril helped us to cope. Even some illegal demonstrations, mostly organized by students, were just done for the fun of it. Imagine, for example, an illegal demonstration to commemorate the Policeman Day. We were shouting the slogans, "Citizen, help the police and beat yourself up," while the police were chasing us and swinging their batons in the air. Completely surreal and nonsensical, yet so much fun. The organization behind it was called Orange Alternative, and its mission was to ridicule the regime by successfully staging absurd ad hoc happenings which regular passerbys could join in. As a matter of principle, no one applied for permissions to organize these kinds of events. The refusal was granted anyway, and it would only make it easier for the police to identify and arrest the organizers. Police, of course, were resourceful and had their informants infiltrating the movement, so most of the resistance leaders were at some point arrested and persecuted. But for us, they were and remain till these days real heroes, and eventually history did them justice.